Downloads of the show are available at Podomatic.com or the Podomatic mobile app.
Oh my God.
When the East is in the house.
Oh my God.
When the East is in the house.
Oh my God.
Hey kids, you are listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and this show is Fish Out of Agua with Michelle Carlo. Today is Tuesday, February 27th, 2018. The heat was on in New York City this past week as temperatures almost hit 80 degrees. And weather people said that was the highest temperature ever recorded for February, ever. So, the heat was also on for certain politicians across this country as well, as high school students across the nation set out to finish the job their grandmothers started. That's right, protest is here. I think maybe we are coming to full circle to what was going on in the 60s, and maybe it's because we didn't finish the job back then, but these kids are going to do it, because these kids are all right. Because remember, when the East is in the house, oh my God, when the kids are in my in the house, you don't know what's going to happen.
When the East is in the house, oh my God.
Danger.
When the East is in the house, oh my God.
When the East is in the house,
oh my God.
Danger.
When the East is in the house, oh my God.
And when we in the house, ain't no time to act shiesty. Come at us feisty to your ass, that is pricey. Costing. You get big like Mr. Boston. Beans in a box, you need more strength than just locks. I rocks. Hardcore. Even when I dress suited on some business shit, my street is deep-rooted. What is this shit? Rappers want to blossom, but they all a costume. Thinking we buffoon, I tell you soon, you'll learn the hard way. Thames and blunts, going Broadway, to the theater. Hot rocks is getting weirder, like Vera. For Alice, the East is in your palace on some proper shit. And it will never be the opposite.
When the East is in the house, oh my God.
Danger!
When the East is in the house, oh my God.
When the East is in the house,
oh my God.
Danger!
When the East is in the house.
To who you worship, that's recommended. Ass kicks come splendid, long-winded, but I don't need my respiratory to bless my story. You got nothing for me. It's been plotted behind doors, they scheming up for my arrival. Rappers are teaming up, doing symphonies. It's gonna be limping MCs when I plan my rap. You be left handicapped. Sweat gather because I bring you no jalopy. Building on heads that be older than your poppy. Pack a NYPF backspin to the essence. You get startled by the presence.
When the East is in the house, oh my God.
Danger.
When the East is in the house, oh my God.
When the East is in the house,
oh my God.
Danger.
When the East is in the house, oh my God.
When the East is in the house,
oh my God.
Danger.
When the East is in the house, oh my God.
When the East is in the house,
oh my God.
Danger.
When the East is in the house, oh my God.
And we're back with Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn. That was Blase Blase with Danger, otherwise known as When the East is in the House, from the Blah 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 album in 1995. I don't often repeat songs episode per episode of this, but this is an exception. This song was picked by Gaston Almonte, who was on interviewed actually a couple of times. We did one interview with him in season one. And he appeared in the holiday special with No Holiday Music from the Footlight Bar just this past holiday. Well, Gaston and our guest artist this week have something in common. They both hail from the same neighborhood. Bet you can guess what that is. Well, if you can't, we're going to keep the music in Brooklyn right now with this song, picked by this week's guest artist to open her episode.
Yeah. This album is dedicated to all the teachers that told me I never amount to nothing. To all the people that lived above the buildings that I was hustling from that called the police on me when I was just trying to make some money to feed my daughter. And all the niggas in the struggle, you know what I'm saying? It's all good, baby. It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall. I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on private stock. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with the hat to match. Remember rapping Duke? The ha, you never thought that hip hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Born sinner, the opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? Peace to Raw G, Brucey B, Kid Capri, Funk Master Flex, Love Bug, Star Ski. I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call a crib, same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know, nigga. I made the change from a common thief to up close and personal with Robin Leach. And I'm far from cheap. I smoke stuff with my peeps all day. Spread love, it's the Brooklyn way. The Moet and Alizé keep me pissy. Girls used to diss me, now they write letters cause they miss me. I never thought it could happen, this rapping stuff. I was too used to packing gats and stuff. Now honeys play me close like butter play toast. From the Mississippi down to the East Coast. Condos in Queens, in dough for weeks. Sold out seats to hear Biggie Small speak. Living life without fear, putting 5 carrots in my baby girl ear. Lunches, brunches, interviews by the pool. Considered a fool cause I dropped out of high school. Stereotypes of a black male misunderstood. And it's still all good, And if you don't know, now you know, nigga. Genesis. When I was dead broke, man, I couldn't picture this. 50-inch screen, money green, leather sofa. Got 2 rides, a limousine with the chauffeur. Phone bill about 2 G's flat. No need to worry, my accountant handles that. And my whole crew is lounging, celebrating every day, no more public housing. Thinking back on my one-room shack. Now my mom pimps a act with mix on her back. And she loves to show me off, of course. Smiles every time my face is up in the sauce. We used to fuss when the landlord dissed us. No heat, wonder why Christmas missed us. Birthdays was the worst days. Now we sip champagne when we thirsty. Damn right I like the life I live. Cause I went from negative to positive. And it's all. And if you don't know, now you know, nigga. And if you don't know, now you know, nigga. And if you don't know, now you know, nigga. Representing B-Town in the house. Junior Mafia, Mad Flavor.
And we're back with Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn. That was Juicy by the notorious B.I.G., otherwise known as Biggie Smalls, otherwise known as Christopher Wallace, from his Ready to Die album, his debut album, in 1994. Well, kids, I bet you can guess what time in the show this is. That's right. Now it's time for my favorite part of the show. Whoa, whoa. Everybody, welcome to Fish Out of Agua's Guest Artist of the Week. Woohoo! And I'm sitting across the table from someone whom I don't know for very long, but has become one of my new favorites. Yes, I know, every week I say that people are my favorite because it's true. Everyone is Michelle's favorite. So welcome to Fish Out of Agua, the lovely, the talented, and crazy-ass friggin' performer activist, Jasmine Fernandez.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so happy to have you here. So, I ask this of everybody when we speak Fish Out of Agua, how and where did we meet?
So, Michelle and I met at the Arts and Humanity Action fundraiser that took place in, I want to say, maybe it was October or November.
This was in December.
Oh, look at that.
It was December.
It feels so long ago.
I know. It was December 5th in Brooklyn at the Knitting Factory.
Yes, absolutely.
It was the brainchild of the amazing Nicole Ferraro, who, this was not the first activist / storytelling event that she curated. She curated one in December 2016 at the LGBTQ Center in the West Village for another cause. So the reason why, dear listeners, I was so enamored of Jasmine immediately when I met her is not just because she told a kick-ass story, not just because she works with a kick-ass foundation, Women of Color.
For Progress,
mm-hmm. Which is just like one of the best job company names in the entire world. But Jasmine is, wait for it, another redheaded Boricua! Wepa!
Yes.
So you have two redheaded Puerto Ricans in one interview.
Yes.
How often is this going to happen? This is like rare. Like rattle, my rattle, y demasiado rattle.
And we both live in Brooklyn. Crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. And we both have like this crazy curly hair too.
Yes.
It's amazing. I mean, no. Okay. So lest you think, why are they making a big deal out of it? Okay. So like redheads are like 3% of the general population.
Maybe like 2 or 1, honestly. Yeah. We're so rare.
Yeah. But for redheaded Puerto Ricans, we might as well be a unicorn that has sparkles coming out of its horn.
Absolutely.
And glitter coming out of its hoo-ha.
I agree. Especially for me, I grew up in East New York, Brooklyn. So to be a light-skinned redhead Boricua in East New York is absolutely rare.
Same thing in my family. I'm the red sheep in my family. But you don't have any Becas.
I don't. I get Becas, I mean, more in
Becas,
the summertime.
Becas, freckles.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Got to keep translating.
Yeah.
I get more freckles during the summertime. And I don't have as many as you do on your face, but I do have them, like, on my back.
Yeah, well, I'm a lot older than you. You know, these are freckles of experience. No, I've always had some sort of freckles, even when I was really young. One of my grandmothers used to tell me that they were angel kisses.
Aww.
And then she would also say that El Señor wasn't sure if he wanted to make you brown or beige, so he made you both.
Oh, I love that story. I went to Catholic school from kindergarten to eighth grade, and I had a nun named Sister Alice who would tell me, she said, you know, your freckles are kisses from God. So I like the angel story more, though.
It's from El Cielo, right?
Yeah, it's from the sky.
The spirit in the sky created the redheaded Puerto Ricans. I don't mind. That this could be there could be worse things. So we've already established that you are a New Yorker. You're a native New Yorker. Were your parents born here also, or you were they born in PR?
No, my parents were born here. I'm actually half Puerto Rican and half Nicaraguan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
wow. So how much rarer
Nicaragua?
Are redheads in Nicaragua?
Yeah, really rare.
So were you? Were you the type of child that always wanted to perform? Do you come from a family that has a history of performance or creativity?
Yeah, but in terms of actual, I guess, trained in the performing arts, no one in my family, as you know, as a typical Latino family, we love music and dance. So growing up, the holidays was always centered around salsa and playing domino. But for me, I knew really young that I wanted to perform. I started dancing when I was 2.5.
Wow.
And I trained in contemporary modern. And so I danced for the first, I want to say 19 years professionally. And then I got into theater around high school, and I did a lot of performing arts, off-Broadway production. And then in college, I started directing. But here's the thing. I'm actually a policy advisor in city government. That's my full-time job. Okay. So I'm in public service. I'm focusing on education policy. But at heart, you know, I'm an artist. And I still very much am connected to the arts. And most recently, have been trying to be more intentional about getting back into performing.
Because it's just a way to express yourself that you can't in a day job.
Absolutely. I think for me, the arts was my creative outlet. I grew up in East New York, Brooklyn. My parents had me really young. They were teenagers, 16
wow.
and 18.
Are they still together?
No, they're not together. My father actually passed away in 2011.
Oh,
it's okay.
Sorry.
I have an amazing stepdad who over the years I've grown to call him dad, and he's been in my life for many, many years. But while my father was incarcerated, you know, the arts was my outlet for expressing myself. And so as early as the age of 10, I started writing. But the first poem that I really realized, like, wait, maybe I'm pretty good at this. Maybe I should, like, get a journal and start writing my entries was after I went to visit my dad at Rikers. On the way back from that visit, I took a napkin and just, like, wrote down my thoughts. And it was that moment where I was like, I need to keep doing this because it's the way that I'm able to cope with what's happening at home. And so I continued to write for many, many years and continued to dance. And then in college, I think that was when I realized that there was an opportunity to combine the arts and advocacy. And so I started doing...
Where did you go to college?
Fairfield University in Connecticut. It's a Jesuit university. And I founded an organization called Performing for Change, and we would put on productions based off of our true life stories. So we would talk about issues of, you know, sexual abuse, domestic violence, body image, you know, sexuality and gender through our original spoken word, through dance, through singing. And, you know, that was the first time where I realized, you know, there is actually a space for me to combine those passions of arts and social justice. And I think in particular for young people of color, the arts is a huge tool to express ourselves and to share our stories and our talent.
Yeah, it's really important because our stories, especially as women, I mean, not just as people of color, but especially as women, our stories have been the ones that have been dismissed, discounted, and discarded mm-hmm. throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the two movements that has seemed to have just risen up with the cusp of the new year, mm-hmm. besides the Me Too movement, is the Time's Up movement.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the Time's Up is... I think was originally started the Time's Up for predators, people that sexually
right.
harass and violate people. But you can also take the Time's Up as a metaphor for Time's Up being for a lot of things.
Right.
And
absolutely.
Time's Up is like Time's Up that we're going to be silent.
Right.
Time's Up that, you know, the stories that we've been writing in our rooms and in our workshops are going to find a larger stage and that they're going to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many, many people and more and more organizations like yours
mm-hmm.
and like what Nicole is doing, like what Asha Novak is doing. So I see this as such, like, I loathe to use the word progressive
mm-hmm.
because that's such a loaded
mm-hmm.
word these days, but it is progress. And what's your take on that?
Well, first, so many thoughts. I want to quickly go back to your point about this being a time for women in particular. I think I come into this work, in the work of arts and advocacy, through the intersections of both being a Latina and a woman. And so for me, those two identities have very much shaped my experiences. And in regards to continuing to share those stories, I absolutely agree with you that like the time is up, and that can be in so many ways. For me, it's about really not allowing the naysayers to kind of dictate where I want to go in my career as a woman, as a Latina, and really being proud of those intersections, especially in like the policy field, where oftentimes there are very few women of color at the table making those key decisions. But also in terms of, you know, like you mentioned, everything that's happening with the truth that's coming out of all these men who have sexually abused women, I think that this is an opportunity for people to know that they are not alone, and that they should not be ashamed, and that there is such a huge movement of people who are with them and supporting them. And my hope is that, you know, people continue to share their stories, but at the same time that other people don't use this as a moment to tokenize.
Right.
I think you have to really understand that these are people's stories and people's experiences and people's trauma. And the fact that people are sharing may also have some triggers in that process, right? And so we as a people, as a community, need to remember to listen and actively listen.
Yes, that's the thing. I think listening is the hardest thing of all, that, you know, so many conversations are happening on social media now, mm-hmm. whereas, you know, maybe 10 years ago, right. there would be a rally or right. there would be a gathering,
right.
and then you would have individual conversations
right.
that maybe would involve like what, maybe 10, 15 people, mm-hmm. or you'd have like a keynote speaker that would speak to the group. But now and those would all be people that were there for a reason.
Right.
These would be people that were invited or who were interested and were there for a reason.
Right.
And you can have this huge overarching dialogue with the entire world, and in one sense it's amazing, and in another sense it's solidifying,
mm-hmm.
because you get nowhere. People take things the wrong way.
Absolutely.
and then like in 5 minutes somebody who asked a legit question, depending on who's the one asking the question, it becomes heads on sticks.
Absolutely. And like you said, you know, there's two sides to it. In
yeah.
one way, it can spread awareness.
Yes.
And then in another way, it's also like we lose the human element.
Yes.
Right? And we lose the element of actually sitting down with someone and having to convey your thoughts and having a dialogue, right? This reminds me, last year for the holidays, I spent the holidays with my fiance, and his family's from the South. And I was really nervous because I knew that some of his family members had voted for Trump. And so I was anticipating what the dinner conversation was going to look
God,
like.
Oh, God. Did you think
right?
it was going to be like that movie Get Out?
Thankfully, my future in-laws are super progressive and super loving. But, you know, other members of the family I knew had very strong political views and identified as Republicans. And I didn't know what to expect, and I was really nervous, but much to my surprise, we were able to actually sit down and have a conversation and say, well, why do you feel that way? As, you know, can you tell me more? Let's talk about this. And we were there for maybe 2.5-3 hours having dinner and wine and having this conversation, and at the end of the conversation, I remember looking at my fiance and smiling like, wow, this just happened, right? And I know that's a really rare situation, and I'll be honest, it took me a while to get to a point where I could speak to you know, not them in particular, but just people in general who were Trump supporters. I think I'm at a point now where sometimes it gets exhausting when you're constantly having to explain white privilege and constantly having to explain to people that there is bias and that everyone has implicit bias, right? And as a person of color, oftentimes when you're the only or few people of color in your workspace, now it's on you. The burden is put on you,
yes.
in the sense that people expect you to know everything, and people expect you to speak for the entire community.
And
right?
you don't, and you can't. And you can't.
Exactly.
And I always kind of felt that once people knew what my heritage was, then people would say, well, you don't look like one, you don't act like one. And I'm like, well, what is it supposed to, you don't sound like one, like what is it supposed to sound like? There was another incident when I scammed leftovers from my grandma, mm-hmm. when she was still alive. And I was heating, and I remember it was around the holidays, and I heated up pasteles, and I had rocan gandules, and I had pernil, and I heated up the food in the microwave. And one of the higher ups in the company I was working for at that time said, "Who the hell is stinking up the office?" And it's like, "Oh, Michelle just heated up her food." And this man came up to me and he said that my food was not appropriate for an office and not to bring those type of dishes in and heat them up anymore. Mm. And I was just devastated. Mm-hmm. Devastated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I can relate. In the workplace, I've been told, you know, "You're intimidating. You're passionate. You're very passionate." And sometimes it can be very assertive, very aggressive, right? But yet, you don't say that to the other people in the room,
no.
right? Because I'm outspoken. Because there's nothing wrong with being assertive, right? But like you said, having to feel the pressure of like, wait, I need to like, I guess, code switch, right? Like you, and it's unfortunate because you want to stay true to your values and who you are, but there's also this pressure of like, I need to make sure that I'm doing everything right, that I'm on my A game. I got to work twice as harder to prove myself. And for me, as a younger woman, I feel that pressure even more because I am one of the youngest, you know, and so feeling the pressure of like, I need to prove to people that I can do this work and, you know, that I am intelligent and I am capable. But then, like you said, being a woman and then being a Latina, you know, carrying those identities in the workplace is definitely something that
yes.
I'm still navigating. There was a point where I started overthinking my like what type of attire to work or to wear to work, because I remember one time I had a colleague who was like, "Wow, that dress looks really good on you," right? But in a really creepy type of way.
Oh, like that, you were dressed for a date as opposed to work?
Meanwhile, I had a Calvin Klein, just regular dress, right? And then another time I had another colleague who was like, "Oh, that's all you're going to eat?" And I was like running to a meeting, so I just grabbed like half a bagel. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, that's why your body looks like that."
Ah.
And so, again.
Was this your friend?
No. Okay. No. This was not a friend, okay. actually. Okay. This was someone who was a senior level, you know, in terms of his role in the organization. But, again, it's really, really tiring and frustrating. But I had this one mentor who once told me that, you know, this is why we're in this work, so that we can continue to open doors for other people who look like us. Like, she literally told me,
right.
she said, "When I was looking at resumes, I looked at your zip code and I saw 11208. And I said, it's not every day that someone from that zip code applies to a job here.
East New York.
And you know it." And so that's really real. And I think, you know, it is difficult to navigate the workplace, the microaggressions, staying true to your identity. And then also having to acknowledge your privilege. I often tell my friends say that I feel like I have dual privilege because I'm seen as a white woman.
Reality is
it has given me certain access to certain spaces compared to my counterparts.
Let's talk about this for a second, because you and I both share, because we both present Caucasian. Mm-hmm. We both benefit from pretty privilege. Mm-hmm. I'm going to speak for myself now.
You're right.
We benefit from pretty privilege. We
right.
benefit from a bit of white privilege,
right.
even though neither one of us look exactly white. So people would think that we're mixed.
Right.
So we have mixed privilege.
Right.
So how do you think that affects perception as opposed to someone who's a couple of shades darker?
Right. No, that's real.
It is real.
It's so real. And the reality is, so growing up, I went to school in Eastern Parkway before the current Eastern Parkway, the gentrified Eastern Parkway. And so back then, there was a really big, I mean, and there's still Caribbean influence there, but a lot of Haitians, Trinidadians, Jamaicans. And I remember the first time I was called a snowflake. And I was like, what?
Oh, my God.
I was like, hold up. Everybody thinks I'm white. And the girls in my high school also didn't think I was Latina enough, right?
Enough.
So that's the thing. Having to fit in between those both worlds where you're like trying to prove to people that I am Latina, and then sometimes within your own culture, because I wasn't born in Puerto Rico, born in Nicaragua, I'm Americanized, right, in their eyes. And then in the workplace, going back to your question, it's like you get treated differently, and then once you say you're Latina, it's like, oh, like, I don't know, I feel like there's a shift, you know, there's a shift in how I'm treated and how I'm perceived.
Everything that you said, I wrote a book about it.
How?
It's called Fish Out of Agua. And this is the extension of that, because I realized that there were so many people that were in the same boat, so to speak, mm-hmm. that were too much of one thing and not enough of the other, and always having to balance an ethnic seesaw. Mm-hmm. And were not totally accepted mm-hmm. by everybody. So you end up becoming your own entity.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, part of that too, Michelle, I won't speak for you, but for me, it was also growing up, none of the characters on cartoons or like even the novelas, right? The Spanish soap operas or like sitcoms, all the Latinas always were like more brown or the J-Lo's, right? or like there's a particular look, right? And I was like, I don't
like
look
Rosie
like
Rosie Perez.
Right. And so I was like,
well, think about it in the 80s. I not yet.
No, I know. But like, so just imagine growing up in East New York, Brooklyn, being the only redhead and being like, I don't look like any of these people. And so for so many years, I kid you not, I would pray to God that he would make me more dark.
Oh,
and
me
I
too.
Would pray to God
oh
that he
God.
Would change my hair color.
Yes,
I would have. I thought I was adopted for so many years. I was like,
I wanted to have straight brown. I wanted to have straight brown hair and no freckles.
And that's the thing. My biological
thank God he didn't listen.
Right.
Gracias.
My biological father, he was Taino Indian. Like in terms of his features, more dark and more trigueño. He would get really, really dark during the summer times. Where me, I can't be in the sun for too long, right? But so growing up, I was so self-conscious of my skin complexion, of having my red hair. And it took a long time to get to a place where I accepted myself. And so now I embrace my curls. I embrace being a redhead. Mm-hmm. I embrace, you know, my culture and my identity. And that's a big part of my spoken word piece that I'll be reading tonight called Yo Soy Boricua. It talks about how for so long I kept feeling like I needed to, you know, be in between. And it got to a point where it's like, no, I'm not going to choose. I am who I am. And I know that Yo Soy Boricua, and I'm proud.
But yes, absolutely. I agree with everything you said 100%. The only thing that I would add as an addendum to that is that I have found, this is for me personally, like there will be certain conversations with, there's a group of Latina writers and performers that I see on Facebook all the time. I've performed with several of them, playwrights, educators, activists, all. And there will be some, you know, conversations and I have to step off mm-hmm. because, you know, I can not relate entirely mm-hmm. to what they're saying. Mm-hmm. So I find myself in thinking about from where we are, and I'm not speaking just for you and me, but anyone else that's mm-hmm. that's like us, do we need to be an ally mm-hmm. as well?
You know, when you're engaging with Latinos who are black and brown skin compared to us, what's our role in those settings? I think it's about, you know, again, finding that balance. Like
yeah,
you said,
because
I don't know what that
me either. And
is.
I don't want to come off like I'm whining because I'm complaining.
Well, the reality,
because I do have the privilege that some other people
absolutely.
Don't have.
And, but you see, that's what it is. I think it's about us in those spaces being allies, because there are people who don't acknowledge that they do benefit from white privilege. And I'm always the first to say I have dual privilege, right? In the sense that I'm seen as a white woman and it has benefited me, unfortunately, in some ways, right? But then when I'm in those spaces, sometimes I understand what you're saying too, where I'll walk into a space and it's supposed to be my people, but I'm getting the stares and now I feel uncomfortable and now I feel like I don't belong, right? And that, like you said, it is very frustrating. I often find myself when I walk into bodegas, I purposely start speaking in Spanish.
Oh my God.
Because I'm like, and it's funny because my fiance, he's biracial and so he looks Dominican. So everyone will always speak to him in Spanish. And then to me, they'll be like, hi, ma'am, how can I help you? And I'm like, pero coño, yo soy Latina. Like, I don't understand. Like, what is that, right? And so, I don't know. It's definitely something that sometimes, till this day, gets under my skin sometimes. But what I've learned is that I can pull out the Spanish when I want to, especially on the trains. When mm-hmm. I hear people bonchinchando and, like, giving the stare, I'll come out with the Spanish.
Yeah.
But then also, again, going back to being allies, I think especially in this movement where we have a lot more Latinos embracing their blackness, like identifying as Afro-Latina, at least for me, my role in there is to help them, you know, in owning that space and being an ally.
And not denying that we have it in us, too.
Even though you can't see it.
It's still there.
It is part of our culture. Like, and that's another thing people seem to forget, especially, unfortunately, what happened with Hurricane Maria. Like, the history of Puerto Rico, like, our culture, we are
a mix of the conquered and the conqueror.
Right, exactly, right? That includes the Taino Indians, the African slaves, the European, you know, colonial masters.
The Irish indentured servants.
Right.
I mean, even though that they were free after however many years, many of them stayed and intermarried. Right. I know, because there's one on my mother's side of the family where there's also African American.
Right. And I think one thing that you said is not denying that it's within us as well. And that's another thing that our people, the Latino community, still has work to do in terms of embracing.
No, please. So getting back to your work, Jasmine, was the fact that your dad was incarcerated, was that a factor in making you want to go into this line of work for social justice and social change?
That's a great question. To be honest, it wasn't until recently that I was comfortable with actually sharing that. So this past spring was the first time that I shared that in a work setting. We were in a meeting about supporting children of incarcerated parents. And I said, I'm a child of a parent who was incarcerated. And everyone in the room was like, what?
Was that a room of people of color also?
It was mixed. But people were like, but you work for, you know, this office within city government. And I was like, yeah, and?
So in other words, wait a second. I'm going to get colloquial here. So if your pops was in the joint, you can't have a responsible job, intelligent job.
Right.
So in other words, if your father was incarcerated, that means that you could not be an educated person.
Right.
That means you had to be por la calle.
Right. And so that was really interesting. But no, I think I first
por la calle, up the street.
I first started off my career working in youth development and, you know, working in art therapy. I thought for a long time that would be my trajectory. But then I ended up getting involved with the social justice movement thanks to some amazing professors, really learning about, you know, gender and sexuality studies and engaging in feminist theory. And then I found myself really wanting to do more in the education system because I felt that there was such a huge disparity here at home. And so after traveling, I, you know, was in many different countries, many different cities. I decided it was time to come back to Brooklyn. I moved back in 2013 now. And I was working for an international nonprofit at the time in a high school in Brooklyn. And my job there was to facilitate all of the community service learning projects, you know, service learning during school time, helping with the college access work. And I realized that there was a huge gap between the people who were working in the schools and the people who were creating the policies. Mm. And I said to myself, I know that there are people of color in this building, but who are the people creating the policies?
And who were they?
Who they are. And so at that point, I decided to go back and get my master's in urban policy analysis with a concentration in education and housing. And I, you know, entered
city government. That's crazy. Like, who the hell made majors in that? Like, right? I never even heard of that.
The new school. I'm a big
That is just incredible and amazing.
Right. And so I continued to perform, you know, not, I guess you can say, it wasn't full-time, but I was still performing in some ways, but really honing in on, you know, entering public service. And through that, over time, you know, it's really grown in many ways. I now am back in the arts, but I'm also have found a new passion, which is I'm really passionate about getting more women of color to run for office. And that is the mission of Women of Color for Progress.
Great. I was just about to ask you to talk more about where you're working now and what the advocacy is there and what like a typical work week would entail for you. Because I find this fascinating.
So my full-time duty, I work in city government. I'm an advisor. I focus on education policy, supporting students of color. I work on a few different criminal justice related projects. And then after hours, I'm heavily involved in two different political organizations, one being New Kings Democrats in Brooklyn, and then Women of Color for Progress, which is an organization that I hope to co-found along another.
So you're a co-founder of that?
I am one of the co-founders.
Great.
We are a group of powerful, ambitious women. I can encourage everyone to check out our website. But yeah, Women of Color for Progress was founded on the notion that, similar, I guess you can say it's the time's up, right? The time is up. We want to ensure that women of color are in positions of power, that they are being represented, that we have more women of color elected so that we can make sure our voices are heard and that policies are being passed that are supporting women. But here's the thing, there's research that shows when women of color are elected into office, they don't only benefit women of color, they benefit immigrant women. They benefit, you know, all types of different marginalized community, because that is what women of color bring to the perspective, right? They bring a holistic approach because of their multi identity.
No one that has, no one that has never been discriminated against knows what it's like to be discriminated against.
Right. And I think it's again, this goes back to this whole notion of like the intersection of your identity, right? When if you're a woman of color, and if you're also gay, and if you're also Muslim, all those identities, right, impact the way the world sees you and the experiences that you have. And so for us, we think it's important that women of color are at the core of the table in terms of policy making and decision making. And we're really, really excited to start building that pipeline of getting women to run, but also, you know, creating more opportunities for women of color to become policymakers, union leaders, right? Like for us, it's about building that pipeline.
What is the, that's a good pipeline to build, better than the poverty to prison pipeline.
Right.
So what's one of the projects you're working on right now that you can share?
Wow. Okay, so I guess with Women of Color for Progress this spring, we are really trying to hone in on having more educational meetings for our members, right? We want them to really be informed about, you know, what is new about the city council structure. We want them to be informed about county committee and how to run for that. Another project that I'm working on that's separate from Women of Color for Progress, I've started doing some, I guess you could say, freelancing and working with a phenomenal woman called Ebony Underwood, and she founded an organization called We Got Us Now. And We Got Us Now is a national organization committed to supporting children of incarcerated parents. And so that obviously is something that's very dear to me, and I look forward to building that partnership and growing with that organization. Outside of the two political organizations, I'm also heavily involved with a youth development organization called the Fiverr Children's Foundation. And what's so unique about Fiverr is they make a 10-year commitment to young people from the age of 8 to 18. They provide year-round mentoring, counseling, they help them get into high schools, college, they provide them with internships, they pay for the SAT classes. And then after you graduate from the program, they're still supporting you as an alumni, helping you navigate college and grad school. And so I'm currently the chairwoman. I'm in my fourth year of chairing the alumni board. So I'm really busy outside of work and also balancing being engaged.
Yes, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I want to get to your story. We're going to get to it in a second, but I want to ask you this one question before we get to it. Do you see yourself running for office? And if so, when?
Ah, that's a great question. It's a question that I've been asked many times. I will say this. I've definitely have considered it. When? That's TBD. That's TBD.
Okay. Well, while we're TBDing it, why don't we, a little pecao, because I don't say a little birdie because okay. This is the Fish Out of Agua show. A little pecao told me that you had some pieces to read for us.
So I have two pieces. The first one is called The Awakening, and this is a piece that my father actually started while he was incarcerated, and then I got to finish the spoken word piece, and it was a piece that I was able to actually read to him while he was in hospice, so it's one that's very personal, but it's really about the journey of this woman getting out of a abusive relationship. I never actually got to talk to him about it, but I have a really good feeling that it was more than likely his tribute to my mom. And the second piece is called Yo Soy Boricua, and it's about my personal experience being a light-skinned redhead Boricua and, you know, navigating that experience. So I'm really excited to share both of these pieces with you all.
Okay, so which one first?
Let's start off with The Awakening.
Okay, The Awakening. So here we are. Jasmine Mari Fernandez, take it away.
You see, she used to love hard, long before her heart got kicked, pushed, and pulled around. He grabbed her heart and ended up burning it like a perm. Although her eyes saw the deception, her heart just wouldn't let her learn. Some dumb woman was she. Everything he said, every time he would lie, she believed. Her heart died. She must have died a thousand deaths. She thought she would never catch a breath. Nothing left, he saw the heart beating from her chest. She tried to call the cops, but you see, that type of thief, they can't arrest. And so there she was left to bleed. But like always, he would return eventually, seducing her with his words and telling her he would change, he would make things right. And just like night, she would return to his side. Even when her friends protested, she told them, mind your business, because this is complex. To me, it's more than just sex. Bad one, though, because once again, she became his victim. But finally, after several attempts, she got fed up and left. She tried to move on and put on a front like she was okay, and yet the pain she felt was killing her inside. But you see, the story doesn't end there. Weeks passed by, and this pain she felt was no longer pains of love, but rather a pain in her lower back. She thought it was due to the vitamins and iron her body lacked, only to find out later by the doctors she lost more than just blood, but a little him as well. This woman ended up going crazy. 2 weeks later, the doctors finally diagnosed her with the deadly virus of love insanity. This poor woman was put into rehab, being released a year later due to the doctor saying, this time it's different. She's now more stable mentally. But you see, all she wanted was revenge. That was her reality. And so she went about her way, gaining a piece of herself back each day. Finally, confident and strong, she stood ready to face him again. And then that day came. He cried and begged for her to take him back, but his words did not work this time. He began to use force as he raised his voice, eventually leaving him with no choice. At this point, it was either her life or his, so she took that blade and sliced his heart away, leaving him left there to bleed, and that was the end of all of her misery. But of course, the cops found her, and she was arrested for first-degree murder. Till this day, she lies behind bars, but regardless, she smiles continuously, because according to her, she says, emotionally, I'm finally free.
Wow. I want to, like, snap fingers on the air. No, the next piece is called Yo Soy Boricua?
Yes, the next piece is called Yo Soy Boricua, and here we go. There was a point in time where I trapped myself by the history of who we are. I thought to myself, I am the way I am because my ancestry roots back to the time when European masters raped my Taino Indian sisters, creating mixed racial babies like me. Actually, to be honest, the following led me to fall deeper into my identity crisis. Who am I? Who should I identify as? Because although my genes are authentic to that of the Latino culture, my skin color is white. So which box do I check? And yet, right when I started to begin to find comfort in my own features, I was hit by the slap of my very own saying, I am not Puerto Rican enough, because I wasn't born on the island, but rather on the mainland. And I am not Puerto Rican enough because I don't understand the struggles of being identified as Commonwealth. And I am not Puerto Rican enough because I didn't experience the summers of playing on the beach and pulling from the canepa trees while listening to the voice of the coqui. Then there are the outsiders who tell me, I am not Puerto Rican enough because I was born here, so therefore I should only identify as American. But you know what? Today I declare the following. I no longer will live in between. Rather, I will celebrate my identity as a proud New York Rican. Yes, I am a light-skinned, natural, curly redhead, tiny waist, big hips woman with a real New York attitude. I'm talking about the type of attitude that makes me wise, artistic, eager, ambitious. A real, eager, ambitious Boricua. This said, I am not a product of colonization. I will not feel guilty for being Commonwealth, nor will I only identify as just American. In all actuality, I am the mixture of the past and tomorrow and today. Therefore, I will live freely like my flag without allowing others to dictate my identity. Why? Because yo soy Boricua.
That was some powerful stuff, girl. Let me ask you a question. Did you ever hear of a play called Yo Soy Latina by Linda Nieves Powell? Mm-mm. Look her up. Linda Nieves Powell, she was on, I've had her on the show. She's an educator and a writer and a director and a producer. She's a woman who's a fierce talent and a giant heart, and she wrote a play called Yo Soy Latina. Then her work is amazing, and I think you would enjoy it very much.
I will absolutely check it out.
So let's talk about Instagram. Where can we find Jasmine Mari?
So my handle is J Mari Fernandez, and you can contact me there on Facebook. I'm under Mari Fernandez, and that's a great way to contact
me. Are you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter as well. It's the same as my Instagram handle, jmarifernandez, J-M-A-R-I Fernandez.
So like her on Facebook, follow her on IG and Twitter, because you can, because yes. She's fabulous.
Yes.
So Jasmine, I want to ask you this one question before we close that I ask of everybody. And I think this is going to be a really poignant question for you because of what we've been talking about. If you were in a room with the child that's just looking out the window or sitting on the bed, standing with no life in their eyes, and you know it's because they feel that there's something inside them that's more than what society and the people around them are saying that they have a right to think that they can be,
mm-hmm.
What would you tell that child?
I think the biggest thing I would tell that child is that you are worth it, that you matter, that you are loved, and that you have the potential to dream and to really exceed all those goals, right? Don't try to be like LeBron. Don't try to be like Oprah. Be you. And that's what makes you unique, and bring that spirit and that energy and continue to remain true to your heart and to your feelings. And also the last thing I would say is don't be afraid to ask for help. I think that is so important. I think you need to remember that there are people there who love you. And even when you don't think there are people there, you just have to be willing to ask for help.
Jasmine Mari, I wish there were more people like you in this world. Maybe they are, but I just haven't found them yet. I hope that our paths cross again soon.
I hope so as well.
Thank you for being on Fish on the Bagua.
I appreciate
Woo-hoo!
It.
Woo! Hug on the air.
Hug on the air.
Woo-hoo!
Seems like it was yesterday when I saw your face. You told me how proud you were, but I walked away. If only I knew what I know today. Ooh, ooh. I would hold you in my arms, I would take the pain. Sometimes I just wanna hide, 'cause it's you I miss. And it's so hard to say goodbye when it comes to this. Ooh. Would you tell me I was wrong? Would you help me? Oh,
And we're back with Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn. That was Christina Aguilera with Hurt from her Back to Basics album back in 1992, another song that Jasmine Mari Fernandez picked for her episode. Yeah, Jasmine Mari, when the East is in the house. Well, kids, that's our show. You have been listening to Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn. We're going to close this episode with the last of Jasmine's picks from Mark Anthony and his Desde al Principio album, which means from the beginning, from 1999. The song is called Preciosa, Precious. And stay tuned for Brooklyn Bandstand next. And we will be back next week with an all-new show. And next week is going to be another month. Oh boy, winter's almost over, kids. And you know what we have to say to that? I bet you can guess. Woohoo!
Yo sé lo que son los encantos de mi Borinquen hermosa. Eso la quiero yo tanto, por siempre la llamaré preciosa. Yo sé de sus hembras trigueñas, sé del olor de sus rosas. Por eso a mi tierra riqueña, por siempre la llamaré preciosa. Isla del Caribe, Isla del Caribe, Borinquen. Preciosa te llaman las olas del mar que te bañan. Preciosa por ser un encanto, por ser un Edén. Y tienes la noble hidalguía de la madre España y el fiero cantío del indio bravío lo tienes también. Preciosa te llaman los bardos que cantan tu historia. No importa el tirano te trate con negra maldad. Preciosa serás sin bandera, sin lauros ni gloria. Preciosa, preciosa te llaman los hijos de la libertad. Preciosa te llaman los bardos que cantan tu historia. No importa el tirano te trate con negra maldad. Preciosa serás sin bandera, sin lauros ni gloria. Oh, preciosa, preciosa te llaman los hijos. There.